Hello and to Scottish Football Covered, and it is time to discuss my favourite kind of weekend, and that is Scottish football news to mix historical parallels. As Athens was sacked, but even a tribute to the king couldn't stop the vengeful Greeks from reducing the host to rubble. Back in the club game, it's 1917 all over again as Lenin takes power in the East, and no end to prohibition as Sweeney's temperance movement keeps the fun corked. But does he have a point? And finally, we can turn our attention back to the future as Scottish Premiership returns to compound every fan's misery. All that cheeriness and more on this episode of Scottish Football Covered. I'm Finlay, and with me today are Robbie and Matt. Robbie, welcome back. How are you?
I'm good, mate. Yeah, thanks. It's been a while since I've been last on the podcast, so it's nice to be back, and plenty to talk about this week. So, yeah, looking forward to it.
Very true, and you have been missed, mate. Reliable as ever. Are you excited to talk about this, or are you feeling as glum as the rest of us?
On the one hand, I'm like bitterly disappointed, as a lot of Scotland fans are. But on the other hand, as a podcaster, it gives us a lot to talk about, doesn't it? So swings and roundabouts.
That's true. It does feel like being a vulture circling over a carcass. But anyway, that's the pleasantries out. Unfortunately, attention to the football. Starting with Scotland, Scott McTominay's penalty had put Scotland men ahead in Greece. And there was could retain their status in Division A, but it wasn't to be. Excuse my pronunciation, but Constantelius opened the scoring after 20 minutes. And Scotland hoping for an aggregate lead score going into the break. Our ambitions were punctured by faced assassin Karatsis in the 42nd minute. Tires well and truly slashed, though, after Liz grabbed Greece's third 13 seconds into the second half to condemn Scotland to comms of Nations League. Now, first thing I want to talk Mac, are the expectations back of that first leg and what you noticed about that threat that Greece offered?
Yeah, I think all the first leg done in hindsight was just gives Scotland a false sense of security going into the second leg. I think the first leg wasn't, it was not a vintage performance by any stretch of the imagination. I think the penalty is debatable. I think it is just by the letter of the law a penalty, but I can see it in another day. I can see that being overturned, and then obviously you get away with what, well, don't get away with one. It wasn't a penalty for Greece at the end, but without VAR, that's a penalty. Greece proved the threat they were. I think there was I wouldn't say it got to the players, but it definitely got to some of the fans, that sense of confidence that we're going to turn Greece over at Hampden, which they're right to think that it was a brilliant result away in Athens, but I don't think anyone would have expected a defeat as heavy as that, despite how good Greece are. But the quality of the Scotland team, I think they should have done a lot better, honestly.
Now, Mac alluded there to something which was, going into it, people expected performance. I want to turn Greece over. And there was some noise about momentum going into this game. There was the draw against Portugal. It was followed by wins against Croatia and Poland. And, of course, that first leg. Was it a reflection of how Scotland were actually playing? I mean, to put it in statistical terms, were Scotland outperforming their XG?
No, I think especially if you look at the first leg against Greece, I actually thought Greece had the better of the game, the majority of it. I don't think Scotland played massively well. But then again, you know, you come away from a hostile kind of stadium with a 1-0 win, that's bound to give you some momentum, especially then coming back to Hampden Park. So like Mac just said, it seems almost disappointing that they weren't able to go and kind of do a bit more with what they had. Obviously, you know, like you just said, the results against Portugal and Croatia, good results. Again, I don't think they were necessarily that good in those games. But to then go and crumble the way that they have there at home in a game as big as that and as important as that is not a good look at all.
Before we get into that crumbling, we'll maybe talk about the ingredient that went into this second leg bake. Mac, one change for Scotland, and that was Ryan Christie coming in for Lewis Ferguson. Now, this has been contentious, especially maybe Steve Clarke disagreeing with the way Iriola plays Christie at club. But I'm of the opinion that Christie's not an out-and-out winger. Was there any kind of sense that there were too few changes or even the wrong changes going to the second leg?
I think it was the wrong change right from the get go. I think Lewis Ferguson's played when he has played for Bologna, he's played really well. I think he's, correct me if I'm wrong, I think he's their captain or he has captained them at some point. And then to play Ryan Christie, who's having arguably to say he's playing at the highest level he's ever played at, and he's playing really good as a number eight box to box midfielder. To play him as a right winger, it's just bizarre to me in a game of that magnitude. Look, I know he probably wants his best players in the park or the players he trusts most at the park on the park at the one time, but with playing Ryan Christie on the wing when he's playing his best football in the middle of the park, not only are you taking the quality away from the middle of the park, I know you've not got a good option of wingers, but you're just playing a guy who he doesn't play there, quite simply. Like, I know he has played in the past, but he doesn't play there he doesn't play there anymore, but it's just well, that was the main one for me. I think if Ryan Christie is playing, he's got to play in the middle of the park, and then it's like Kenny McLean still starting. I don't want to get on Kenny McLean's back, but surely there's better options there. But I'm going to say this quickly though as well: the game can't be pinned on Steve Clarke's reluctance to drop guys like Grant Hanley and Kenny McLean. The bigger players have got to start stepping up more as well. It's easy to label these guys as scapegoats, but guys like John McGinn and Andy Robertson, the captain, they've not turned up for Scotland for a long time now. So, it's easy to go, Kenny McLean's not good enough, he shouldn't be in the squad. But the players who should be in the squad need to start buttoning up their ideas, bar Scott McTominay, who's been tremendous as always.
That's a fair point. I think there's been a lot of criticism saying that those at Premier League level or on whom the expectation has been placed, and rightly, because that comes with the territory of being equally praised. Robbie, do you agree with the fact that maybe the onus should be placed on the kind of better players and the role that they play in leading that squad rather than targeting those who are honestly maybe not of the level, but are still just.
To an extent, yeah, I think obviously your bigger players are always going to be the ones that the team will look to kind of give them a bit of inspiration. But I think you've also got to kind of put some kind of onus on the manager, because at the end of the day, football is a team sport. There's 11 players on that pitch. You can't really just pin it down on maybe two or three of the players who are supposed to be the elite players. I thought there was a lot of kind of changes that Steve Clarke should have made and didn't, and that's for the starting 11 and during the game. I think Scotland really, really, really struggle with their striker issues, but Steve Clarke just seems to consistently go with Che Adams, who I think personally is nowhere near good enough. And there's young talent like Tommy Conway on the bench who gets very, very little game time. Who, yes, maybe he's not quite at the same level as Che Adams is in terms of the league that they're in, but the Championship is a very kind of, it's a much more competitive league these days than it ever was. And he's having a very, very good season there. So I just don't see why, when things aren't working, why the manager can't just kind of mix it up a little bit and just try something new, because clearly what he's got at the moment isn't the right formula.
Definitely a few things to note from that game, and you've touched Adams still in the squad, the maybe into a reliance on old Tommy Conway on the bench, James Wilson coming on late, and someone who is, in my eyes, a consummate poacher, crossing from the middle kind of third of Greece's half, which is quite odd. three strikers, and Kieran Tierney comes on, little to no Whitford. Lennon Miller doesn't make an appearance. Lewis Ferguson not trusted to start in that second game. And McKenna, a regular starter for Las Palmas, kind of relegated to the bench in favour of Grant Hanley, a player who doesn't get much game time for Birmingham in League One. Mac, is there just been one blunder after another in team selection? What's going on here?
I think team selection is Steve Clarke's biggest criticism of managers entitled to the style of play. I don't agree with his, but that's what he does, and that's what's got us to back-to-back European championships at the end of the day. But it's the same thing that killed Gordon Strachan. It's this reluctance to bring in new blood. I know he has brought in James Wilson and Lennon Miller. It's all good doing that, but you bring on James Wilson with 50 minutes to go. It's 15 mi more minutes off. Initially, I thought he was going to get, and Lennon Miller doesn't see the light of day. Cast your mind back to all the way back to Euro 2020 or 2021, whatever you want to call it. David Turnbull had a brilliant season for Celtic. He never got a minute all tournament ahead of any of Steve Clarke's favourites. So I think he just needs to broaden his horizons just to inject the squad with new, even Ryan Christie, who's playing it wide, we've touched on, playing him. It's the cliche, like a new signing. I know it doesn't really work for international football, but if you play him in his natural position this season, of in the middle of the park, you just open up so many more doors for this Scotland team. And this is the best the Scotland team's been, probably in my lifetime. Maybe the George Burley era might just edge it, but it really doesn't look like we're going to achieve anything of note with them. If we don't freshen up the ideas within the squad.
I mean, freshness is going to be essential in qualifying for the first World Cup since 1998. Now, Robbie, in this group, we have Denmark. They lost that two-legged tie to Portugal, and of Belarus, and of course, Greece. Does that give you some cause for concern? This is a new format. Top qualifies automatically. Second gets a playoff. I think third and fourth get absolutely nothing.
Yeah, I think it is a cause for concern. I think if you look at it on paper at the moment, Denmark are the favourites to win that group. Although they did lose out to Portugal yesterday, was it? They are a very, very strong side, and they still scored two or three goals against Portugal across the entire tie. Scotland, I don't think we'll be able to get any good results against Denmark in the way they're playing at the moment. Greece, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because you would probably say on paper Scotland should be beating Greece, but you've just seen what's happened there at Hampden Park, getting absolutely torn apart in their own backyard. So, you know, if Greece can continue that kind of form, especially with the new youngster that they've got, I can't remember exactly what he was called now. Kouretsis, was it? He looked like the real deal. So it's not really kind of. I don't think it's too hopeful for Scotland, to be honest with you, because there's a couple of strong teams in there, and they're really going to have to kind of buck their ideas up quickly if they want to be in with a chance of qualifying.
Now, if Scotland want to be in a chance within, I'll have a chance of qualifying. People are saying that there's going to be a change needed, and that starts with Steve Clarke. We've discussed privately that the David Moyes ship has now sailed. David Moyes now back at Everton and pulling up trees. But Mac, are there any contenders that you would like to see?
I tweeted last night, I think I would like to see Russell Martin personally, but I know that's a bit of a stretch. I like the way his teams play football, but club football, transferring that international football to get the fluidity of the systems that he plays. it's really difficult. I know it's not the same sort of game in a nutshell, really, but he would be my number one candidate. He obviously Scotland international. He's he'll be familiar with the setup. Other than that, I know the SFA traditionally go down the Scottish route. I think it's only Bert Vokes who's the only foreign manager. Maybe that's, look, we're talking about fresh enough ideas. Maybe we have to broaden our horizons and get a first foreign coach in since Bert Vokes. But looking at the available managers, I'm not too sure who it would be. Look, it's that's the only thing, isn't it? It's, if you want to know the Steve Clarke, who do you get in? It's, look, it's just not my decision to make, thank God.
No, I think I would love to see Suter and Grant Hanley, and that's kind of playing out from the back. That would be a real treat. Robbie, did you have any ideas? Did anyone spring to mind? Is there maybe a kind of lack of inspiration at the moment?
I did have one name actually that did spring to mind, and it kind of does continue with that bringing a new foreign manager in and kind of shaking things up a little bit. He's not managed for a little bit apart from in Saudi Arabia, but I would actually quite like to see Slaven Bilic come in. I don't know how realistic that would be, but I think actually that he would be quite a good fit for Scotland. He played the same formation that Scotland are currently playing at West Ham. And he is used to managing teams that maybe aren't doing quite as well as they should be doing. And I think while he was at West Ham, Bilic was very, very good at tightening up his midfield and his defence. And I think that is desperately, desperately what Scotland need right now. You know, watching that Greece game, I thought the midfielder was an absolute joke. They just got torn apart time after time after time, and they just looked non-existent. And I think he would be quite a good manager to maybe kind of steady the ship a little bit there.
No, Slaven Bilic, sack him, bring in Moyes, sack him, bring in Greeny, sack him, bring back Moyes. I like your thinking. Very 4D chess. I think stranger things have happened as we're going to talk about with another appointment. But I wanted to circle back one more thing before we moved on from the game. And that was something I noticed about the coverage. And the first thing I wanted to say and talk about was punditry. Because in that first game, I didn't think that Scotland played very well. And I think they were very lucky. And I think the fact that Greece had one shot on target out of 24, that wasn't going to happen again. And that the fact that we were making so many blocks and saves on the line, and Grant Hanley received a lot of praise, which is absolutely fine. But then came the reverse leg in that 3-0. And a lot of the focus seemed to be on how well Greece played and what a wonder goal that was. Or, but I was surprised because a lot of the goals, they were in acres of space. And I think this was symptomatic of maybe a wider reluctance to criticise the Scotland team from the pundits. And am I making this up, or is this something that you might have picked up on, Robbie?
I did pick up on it, yeah, and I do agree with you. I think there probably was a bit of a maybe reluctance to slate the team. I'm not 100% sure why. Obviously, I know that the result was a fantastic result in the first leg, you know, to go away to Greece, which, like I've already said, the atmosphere was very hostile and pick those points up. It's a great result, but surely as a pundit, you have to strip that down to its bare bones and look at it as, did we actually play that well there? Was, you know, yes, it was a positive result, but was it a positive performance? And like you've said, I didn't think it was. So I'm not really sure what that was about, but yeah, it seemed a bit odd to me.
Mike, I think maybe one of the things that Robbie is talking about or wondering is why they weren't criticising. Lyndon Dykes was on there, and Lyndon remains a part of this Scotland squad. He's just injured, so you can kind of see why. And Naismith is a manager still, he's not that kind of far off having been sacked. He's still a contender for a lot of jobs. And maybe one eye on the future as a possible national team manager. Does that make for a healthy kind of punditry lineup when the Scottish game needs realism.
No, you're bang on with that. It needs realism, and you're not going to get that with two guys who've been capped under Steve Clarke, especially as you said, Lyndon Dykes is still very much a part of the setup. Look, I don't want to be overcritical of Steve Clarke. I think I've probably gave it away that I don't think he's a man for the job, but at the end of the day, before Steve Clarke came in, nobody really cared about the Scottish national team in Scotland. It was actually quite sad to see. He's came in, got his back-to-back European Championships, and he's brought that good feeling. And perhaps he's a victim of his own success. He's set the expectation, and he's just not matching the expectation that he's previously set. But if you've got a panel with two people that have played under him, they're going to have a lot of respect for him. And you see, it's not just for Steve Clarke and the Scotland setup. You see it a lot of times, ex-pros like Roy Keane, for example. He's the best example. He never criticised. Oh, he was one of the very last to criticise Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Chris Sutton, he was one of the very last to criticise Neil Lennon. You need a balanced view. Perhaps even get somebody like, I don't know, a pundit from England. I can't think of the top of my head, but just to offer you that perspective, the neutral, like a neutral perspective, I think it's crucial for any punditry team, never mind just Scottish national team games.
To be honest, I agree, and I think there are plenty of kind of very talented pundits who would be able to talk about Scotland in the same way Scottish pundits like are able to go down and give an unbiased opinion when the England team aren't doing so well. But I found that the difference is because, and if I'm wrong about this, please shout out, but there's a closer kind of bond between media and individuals in Scotland, just because of the size of the kind of the population and the sport itself, everything's obviously going to be closer knit. Whereas in England, there is that distance where you can just have these daily podcasts praising and criticizing in equal measure, but slightly more removed from the people that you kind of talk about. But anyway, that's a discussion for another time. I wanted to talk about what I believe is maybe actually the biggest shock of the weekend. And that came in the form of the appointment of Neil Lennon as manager of Dunfermline Athletic. If I am to use their Sunday name, they sit in ninth playoff place, 2 points behind Hamilton Accies and six ahead of Airdrie, who are, in my mind, the undertaker of the Royal Rumble of a championship. He becomes their fourth manager of the season, in ticket John McLaughlin and Michael Tidzer, who was relieved of his responsibility. Now, Tidzer, of course, league winner of like in charge of Kelty Hearts. Although, given the amount of people who have that achievement under their belt in recent years, I'm starting to think that it's a bit like a bit of work experience you lie about for your CV. But I digress. Mac, did this appointment come as a surprise to you?
Oh, there's a massive surprise. I think when I seen this story first break, I never believed it. Because like, he's been linked with every Premiership job that's came available, except the Rangers job. He's literally been linked with Aberdeen, Motherwell, St Johnstone, and every time he's kind of distanced himself from it. So to see him go to, with all due respect, Dunfermline, it's obviously it is only to the end of the season, so we'll see how far it goes, but it's a good chance for him to get his name back in there because he's, I don't want to say he's become a bit of a laughing stock, but he's no but painted himself in glory with his spell at Celtic and then his following spells in Cyprus and Romania. He's went down an unconventional route and it's not quite worked out for him. So back home soil, back to the bread and butter of Scottish football. Hopefully it does work out for him because I think he's drew a break, but it is an interesting appointment. It's an ambitious appointment from Dunfermline. They're obviously worried about their safety, and it's probably cost them a pretty penny to get a guy like Neil Lennon, who's won a lot in Scottish football. So, all the best to them. And I'm really excited to see the end of the season. Obviously, his first game is against his former captain, Scott Brown. So, that'll be a brilliant game to watch, considering how good they have been this season as well.
Well, Mac, whilst I still have you on the line, I wanted to ask, is he the right man for the job, because it can be difficult sometimes for managers to understand. Now, of course, Neil Lennon is a championship winner with Hibs. That's not, but this feels like a complete just struggling Dunfermline. Is it maybe they've just kind of found the biggest name, or is this genuinely a good appointment in your eyes?
I think it's a good appointment, but I think you're also right in saying they've just got the biggest name possible. But then, look, that sometimes works. They just look, don't, I don't think the Dunfermline players could have even thought, especially they just got Michael Tidser, with all due respect, as you said, he's only got that Celtic Hearts title with his CV. He's not got a pedigree like Neil Lennon. Whereas getting a guy like Neil Lennon, and I know he's quite polarizing in Scottish football, but the players in the Dunfermline dressing room were like, right. And you've heard that from a lot of ex-Celtic players and ex-Hibs players. Neil Lennon makes you want to run through a brick wall for him. So maybe that's just what they need. But if you go based on his achievements, he's not the type of guy that goes into a team at the foot of the table and drives them to safety. He's always up the other end of the table, trying to win championships, trying to win premierships. So it's that word again. It's going to be really interesting. It is only, I think, there's only six games to go. They might have just hit the panic button, but if your panic button is getting a manager who's won five or six league titles, won Scottish Cups, won League Cups, both as a player and a manager, it's not the worst panic button to hit, I don't think.
No, absolutely fair point. Robbie, I'm going to turn to you, our resident expert in public relations. Could this be fatal to Lennon's career if this doesn't pan out? Or can he just brush this off? Challenge was just impossible for any manager.
Well, first of all, thank you for your comment on my public relations expertise.
Yes.
But I think that I don't think that it can be damaging to his career, because with all due respect to Dunfermline, I think this is almost like he's on a contract until the end of the season. They're already in the playoff relegation zone, and it just seems like a little bit of a. This is kind of a, I don't know, what would you call it? Whatever happens, happens
Free hit.
appointment. It's one of them where it just seems like if it does, if it does go to shit, excuse my French, then there's not really kind of a, there's not as much of a kind of, it was always kind of already maybe going to happen, so there isn't that kind of risk element there. The one thing that I would say is that I'm a little bit on the fence as to how he will do, in the sense that if you looked back to when he managed Bolton, when they were back in League One, I believe, or it might have been the Championship, he didn't do particularly well there, and that is a team that at the time were kind of struggling down at the bottom of the table. He was there for about a year and a half, and I think he after eight or nine games where he were, at the start of the season where they did quite well, they did really struggle. So it'll be interesting to see whether or not he can kind of pull them out of this. The only thing that I would say about that is that they did have a 8 or 9 game kind of streak when he first joined, so maybe they can get that kind of new manager bounce, and start to pull away from the relegation zone. But I don't think that it is really very risky for his career, because it's not really a high risk job, is it? If they go down, they were potentially already going to go down anyway.
No, I think some voters will hope he has that same bounce on them. Now, I want to set our kind of gaze looking up, going from the fans here. And if you are a fan contemplating how, in, due to the alcohol ban in stadium, how you might drown your sorrows in real time as Greece scored another. Well, it looked like to get your rocks off abroad. As John Swinney has said, the government no intention of making changes and that the ban will remain in place. He said, "We have no plans to go down such a route because it's important, necessary steps that we can to ensure that we address the country's relationship with alcohol and that we have a safe and supportive sport for all." Mac, what were your thoughts about this?
Penny for my thoughts. Oh, but John Swinney. This is a guy. I don't want to turn this into Scottish politics covered, but you might not remember. During COVID, he was a secretary guy, not the education secretary. That's it. And he made the decision to award the exam results based on the school's history. So that just basically meant if your school was in a poor area, the school kids done worse, then that the people who didn't get to sit the exams got the results based on that, which is a classist. That is quite classist. This again is another classist thing, in my opinion. You're saying you have to focus on this country's problem with alcohol, so we can't sell it at Hampden Park when Scotland football team are playing, but if you have a rugby game there, you can sell alcohol. It doesn't make any sense. It's obviously football is the working class sport. It's a classist statement from John Swinney. He says it's based on the evidence which is there. We're still waiting to hear what this evidence is. I think I've made it pretty clear where I stand on the issue. But it makes no sense. The ban came in 1980 or 1981 because a riot after a Scottish Cup final, and because between Celtic and Rangers, and because of that, you can't have a drink watching Bonnyrigg Rose versus Forfar in League Two. It's brain dead. There's got to be some sort of trial system where we can implement the sale alcohol in grounds. Let categorised games obviously don't sell alcohol when Celtic play Rangers, but when Celtic play St Johnstone, have alcohol in the concourse till 5 to 3, and then not only that, the funding that will bring to clubs all the way from the Premiership to League Two will be massive. Honestly, there needs to be a positive conversation started, and it's not going to happen anytime soon.
Robbie, is there any disagreement from you, or is this a sentiment that you share?
There's no disagreement, though. I don't really like to throw around the classism kind of thing very lightly, but I do think there is quite a strong element of that in this. Especially because in a lot of the grounds, the people who pay for the hospitality tickets often can drink, but the people who just pay for the normal ones can't. So you just kind of think there is a bit of that in there. And like Max already kind of alluded to, the ban was implemented 40 something years ago, 45 years ago, maybe more. That is over a generation ago. You know, football fans, all of it was so different back then that the fact that there's still an alcohol ban on a game which has evolved completely within, you know, the game and the social aspect of it, it just seems daft to still have it there. I think you have to kind of give the new generation a chance to prove that people can go to the game, drink beer, and be responsible. You know, it's not going to result in a mass riot every single time. I can understand why they kind of are a little bit hesitant about it, because obviously football has its kind of connotations, not just Scottish football, English football as well. Football in general has that kind of, I suppose, rain cloud hanging over it because of what happened in the 70s and 80s with hooliganism. But how long ago is that? You know, people need to kind of be given another chance to show that they can. And I think if the ban was lifted, then the people would show that they can drink responsibly.
No, very well. From the two of you, I think the views of this podcast pretty synonymous across the board. Now, after a sobering 90 Hampden, there is the chance to turn our attention forwards towards the weekend's football, and it's the return of the Scottish Premiership, a very exciting return to football for them. Now, back. Is this the weekend that we see the topics all but confirmed, or is there maybe a surprise in store as we get ever closer to that top six split.
I don't think it's a week it gets confirmed, but it will go a long way. It just it the Celtic are playing Hearts. Hearts are six. Celtic are going to go out with a point to prove after the defeat to Rangers. Then you've got Motherwell, who are away to Aberdeen. Aberdeen, most unpredictable team in the league. Motherwell need 3 points. Hearts need 3 points. Aberdeen, if they want any realistic chance of finishing third, they'll probably win games like that. But Motherwell under Michael Vimmer look like a really hard team to beat. The game I'm not going to say it, the game I'm looking forward to, but the game that I think is going to be the biggest one to watch is that one at Pittodrie, Aberdeen versus Motherwell. A Motherwell win, and then a predictable defeat of Hearts at Celtic Park puts Motherwell at top six, and then you've only got two games. You're getting every game closer to the end of the well, to the split. So it's a big game for the top six, but nothing set in stone. No chance.
Robbie, I wanted to turn your attention to one game in particular here, and that was St Mirren versus Kilmarnock. Now, St Mirren are 4 points behind Hearts in sixth. We're not far off the split, as Mike mentioned. And fortunately for Stephen Robinson, Hearts have league leader Celtic. Is this a must win for St Mirren? And also, Kilmarnock are only 3 points behind them. And just 1 point ahead of the relegation playoff. Maybe the kind of surprise contender for most important game of the weekend.
Yeah, I do agree with you there. I think maybe for Kilmarnock, maybe it's just a little bit too far out of reach, but for St Mirren, it definitely isn't. Like you say, Hearts have got Celtic this weekend. Celtic are on the back of a painful loss in the derby. They're going to want to bounce back and really kind of put a number on Hearts here. So yeah, I think it is really, really important that St Mirren pick up these points. You know, they're at home. They've not been in very good form recently, but in a game like this, it can sometimes go out the window. You know, they're going to be right up for this. So yeah, I think it could be a big game. Obviously, Kilmarnock could be fighting for it as well. They're not just because they're a little bit adrift doesn't mean they're gonna, you know, roll over and die. But I don't think that they're probably gonna get into that top half. But same mirroring, yeah, definitely.
Now, is that the game you are most looking forward to? If you had multi-screens, imagine all of them in front of you, which one would have your attention come this weekend?
I'd maybe go with Aberdeen Motherwell. Purely because there's a lot riding on that as well. Aberdeen obviously have been in better form recently. Motherwell kind of starting to turn a corner as well. I do think that there will probably be quite a bit of action in that one with, you know, just how important it is for both teams. So yeah, I would probably say that one would be my game to watch this weekend.
Mike, we know your mystic abilities. You already know all the scores, how it's going to unfold. But can you tell us, mere mortals, which one of these games would normally have drawn your eyeballs?
I don't want to spoil yous, but if you're gonna put a curtain one, I would put your money on an Aberdeen win in Pittodrie. I'm gonna go see it. That would be the game that's drawn my attention. But for the sake of being different to Colonel Robbie just says that was the game he had drawn, it would probably be that game, the other game we touched on, St Mirren and Kilmarnock. There's a lot to play for in that game. St Mirren, it's probably the last roll of the dice for a serious top six charge. And then if all going like I've said, Celtic winning and Aberdeen winning, it throws a cat amongst the pigeons where that's three teams getting that last top six spot. And then once you're in sixth, you have a chance of getting that fifth spot, which is the last European spot for the Conference League qualifiers. So yeah, it is a big weekend. For the sake of being different, I'll say the game you should watch if you have a dodgy stick, which we don't condone, would be St Mirren. And I've absolutely completely forgot the game. St Mirren and Kilmarnock, the game, but hyping up St Mirren and Kilmarnock.
Oh, you're some promoter. I personally, I'm gonna be a little bit of a football hipster, turn towards the Sabbath, and go Ross County Dundee United. I think that has a lot of potential to create exciting narratives. If Ross County win and Hearts lose, they find themselves just 1 point off the playoffs. Given that last season was a very difficult one for them, this could be very interesting. And it's not like we needed more confirmation that they were much improved and that Doncowie is doing a very good job up north. And, for Jim Goodwin, the side that's been kind of pushing for those European places all season, now starting to fall away. 1 win in 6. They are really clinging on for life in that top half of the table. And I think there is a lot to be said about those two teams. Me to decide which one of those games you should be watching come Saturday. In the meantime, that is unfortunately all the time that we have. But I'd like my brilliant guests, Mac and Robbie, thank you once again, and very much looking forward to reviewing the weekend's action with you come whenever that may be, Sunday evening, Monday. And thank you to you, the listener, and hope to catch you again very soon for another episode of Scottish Football Covered. That is everything from us, and for now.